This is CliffCentral.com.
All right, little Shawn Mendes for you. Monday morning, CliffCentral.com, and it's in my blood. 7 o'clock on the dot, time for us to find out what's happening in the world around us and to work out a whole bunch of things that will hopefully help you have a better, more productive and more useful week. We'll get to my personality thing in a moment or two. I actually got a message now from Dr. Jonathan Witt, who listens to us all the time. He said they're characteristics. So I went and had a look. Apparently, these five things are things that all of us have in varying quantities. And you have to figure out where you fit on the spectrum. Like, if you took all of your personality and you divided it into five, not five equal parts, but five parts, you'd have a little bit of each of these.
Ooh.
So I'll get to those in a second. Start thinking about what you think it might be. What do you got for us, Mabs?
So there are several thousand people in Sweden who are walking around with injected microchips under their skin.
Already? It's happening already?
It's happening already. It's the size of a grain of rice, but it could hold the key to many aspects of your life. A tiny microchip inserted under the skin can replace the need to carry your car keys or your house keys, credit cards, tickets, plane tickets, bus tickets, anything. So Sweden, it is a welcome reality, and a growing number of people are favoring the convenience over concerns of potential personal data violations, because this is always the case, isn't it? Whenever we're talking about advances in technology, immediately people get nervous and they go, well, what about my privacy? Well, right. The people in Sweden favor convenience over this concern with privacy. The small implants were first used in 2015 in Sweden, initially confidentially, as well as several other countries. But now more and more Swedes are open to the idea of having this microchip injected under their skin. And, you know, yeah.
Well, you're going to have to make this decision for yourself at some point, aren't you? Think about when they eventually develop a really good interface between biology and technology. When they eventually develop a means for you to, like, pop a stick into your neck through a USB port, and you can upload a language. I mean, you probably won't even have to do that. It'll happen wirelessly. But just imagine, and this is where you're going to have to decide, because the people who jump on board early will reap the rewards and the benefits, but they'll also deal with all the hiccups,
yeah,
all the rough edges, all the problem areas. And there could be some – I mean, we don't know everything about how the brain works. There could be some serious malfunctions.
And you also have to wonder how much it will cost, because obviously not everyone is going to be able to do it.
Well, let's imagine
if it boils down to cost.
Well, let's imagine it doesn't, because let's say the research companies that are trying to be the next big thing, in order to get to some point where you're able to sell a product, you'll need to do a lot of experiments and you'll need lots of volunteers. You'll need people who are willing to
be the guinea pigs.
The guinea pigs. Right. Now, what I'm trying to figure out here is, would I say yes? And at what point would I say yes? Have you thought about that? If they came knocking on your door, said, hey, Sia, listen, we've got this new, terrific, you know, neuro-linguistic thing that we're figuring out, and we'd like you to be the one because you have a propensity for communication. You're obviously quite good at speaking. You input languages very quickly into your brain. We'd like you to be the person who tests this out. Can we put this microchip in your head?
No.
No.
No. No.
I love my life too much. And I know and I've heard of, you know, the college students who are like, ah, why not? Let me give my blood sample here. Let me give my sperm there for a cost. And, you know, that's it. If you don't have a lot to lose, if I didn't, I would do that. But now I'm like,
I don't want to be a guinea pig.
Nope, life is too good. I don't want to risk it.
Because when they're still in the testing phase, all sorts of things could go wrong.
Exactly.
Malfunctions. Now your brain is, you know, damaged in some other way. I just don't want to be the guinea pig, no. So that would be a no.
And money isn't enough when you've lost half of your brain.
No, okay.
Yeah, it's your brain. You don't quite bounce back from that.
No,
yeah.
Not exactly.
All right, so at what point do you think it would be worth trying? Let's say they put out the alpha version of the program, and now it's working. They've tested it on a whole lot of homeless people who you guys clearly don't care about, because you wouldn't put yourselves forward. So someone else must do it. All right. So
no, they'll have volunteers.
Yeah, well,
they'll put out a call and say, this is what we're doing, and there's bound to be people who are going to go there and say, sign me up.
But guys, there's also criminals out there. We need to use them productively in society.
Like people in prisons?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you know what, Shashi, when you get a sentence, I sentence you to 35 years in jail and 17 experiments by this doctor. That'd be pretty rad.
All right. Mm. So, Ben, what would it take to get you to participate in a program like this?
Gareth, a lot of money. That's what it comes down to. Everyone's got a price. I'm not above that.
How much, Ben?
Well, see, the hard thing is that they can use big words that start with neuro, and you'll be like, yeah, how bad can it be? Mm. You're obviously taking a chance here.
You also could wake up in the morning and have a stroke. You don't know.
You could also wake up and you have a superpower, which we all need. So you're on the dice either way.
I have to tell you, like, you guys immediately went no. I don't know, hey, I might want to be up there with the testing phase.
Really?
Yeah. But if you look at the
testing
phase.
You talk about what you've got to lose, but imagine what you've got to gain.
Okay, but now when the first generation of a product comes out, you don't go, well, that's the one I'm going to buy.
Mm.
So what would woo you?
The ability to learn a language overnight? Are you kidding? Imagine that. So maybe I dribble a bit.
Oh.
Yeah.
But it's fine. I'll know German by tomorrow. Right,
maybe for like 3 minutes at 3 o'clock every day you scream. It's just for 3 whole minutes. Oh, that's just Gareth 3 minutes. Yeah. He'll be okay after this.
Just don't pay any attention to him. This happens.
And then afterwards you start apologizing profusely in Spanish, French, and German. Because you can.
But imagine, okay, so you get a terrible headache for like an hour every day, but you could speak every language on the planet.
Mm, 1 whole hour?
An hour's really, really bad headache. It's bad.
Give me 5 minutes, and perhaps I'd consider it.
It's a decent trade-off. Like, personally, my life right now, I think, is okay. I know I can make it better, so I'm happy. If my life's terrible, you got nothing to lose in life. Sure, yeah. Sign me up for everything twice.
I see. My life's not terrible, but I would be signed up. This is so tempting. Imagine you're able to...
Never hold a stool.
What?
All right, Ben's looking for the negatives that would make it...
No, but I mean, this is... There are possibilities. You're talking trade-offs here, because I share your sentiment. It's this wide-eyed curiosity towards what we could be as humans, but at the same time, poo running down your leg every day. That's got to be a flat-out deterrent. Mm.
Mm-mm.
It just is.
Someone says, do you remember that episode of Black Mirror where the guy is a test subject for a gaming company and they inserted
such a
chip in his
hard that was probably one of the worst episodes. I needed a hug after watching that.
Tell CEO about the episode.
You gotta watch it. No, you gotta watch it. It'll put even more hair on your chest.
When I hear reviews like that, that's why I don't mind watching This Is Us and crying. No, thank you.
Well, think about it. I'd be interested to know what you would be willing to give up and what you'd be interested in gaining. Because it's really a trade-off. Like Ben says, it's how bad and how good would you like it to be for it to be a worthwhile experiment for you?
And for you, so what you're saying is you'd be fine with the ability to...
Look, these people in Sweden, they're just using these chips to track their behavior and to track their geography and that kind of thing. That's fine. And privacy, that's your biggest worry here because you might be cheating on your wife or something like that. You might be involved in some criminal activity and they'll find you.
Mm.
But for the rest of us, I mean, listen, fact is, if you put it all out there and you don't have anything to hide and you're not embarrassed about your life, then so what is privacy? Like, who cares, So people know that I was at Woolworths on Saturday. Big deal.
Mm.
If you've got nothing to hide, privacy's not a big issue to you. If privacy's a big issue to you, it's usually because you don't want everyone to know your business, and that's understandable. I get that. All of us have that inclination. But similarly here, imagine the benefits. Like when they do come out with the first... Let's not make it about language. Let me make it more tantalizing for you. Imagine having all the information immediately available to you. You'd have to type it into Wikipedia or Google. It's just there. Everything that is on Wikipedia is in your brain. Imagine that. All that information, and you're able to process from it instantly. Your brain doesn't have to waste time trying to remember things. Instead, it can spend that time processing the information. Isn't that exciting? Doesn't that
hugely? Which
that grabs you, right?
So that show Limitless, Yeah. This is exactly basically what happens. Right. You take a pill and you function at a higher level, but you have to have this antidote. Otherwise, you could probably just, your head is going to explode.
Yeah. I'm not even worried about the whole privacy thing because, I mean, we lost that battle a long time ago.
Right.
I just don't want to be the first group of people that it gets tested on. They must test it, and then in 5 years, I'll be like, sign me up for that.
All right.
They've ironed out all the kinks that possibly could have resulted in bad things. Okay, then sign me up.
Yeah, I don't mind being late to a trend like that.
Very nice. We've got a couple of messages here. This, Ben, will be for you mostly, and then we'll get to some more news. Alex Ferguson was at United for 27 years. Wenger was at Arsenal for
27.
Longer. But it's no record, yeah. That's Carl.
Wow, Carl, that's 27.
Yeah, Wenger was there for 1,235 games with Arsenal, or Arsehole, as they've called it here. What a maniac. He had to go and stay for that one extra game and couldn't stop at 1, 2, 3, 4 like a normal person would have.
Mm. Wow, that's very useful, thank you.
1, 2, 3, 4, and he went to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Well, he went to 1, 2, 3, 5. Apparently, Australia also participate in the Eurovision contest.
Yep.
And it seems like a competition for countries who appreciate and adore excessive pageantry, decadence, and the snobbery that comes with it. That's according to someone who's just telegrammed us that message. Kala says, morning guys, Gareth, I watched the roast last week. It felt like they decided to give some easier break and just roast you. You handled it well, though. It's all a great production, except for the audience cuts that were very unnatural. But we can't blame you for that.
Oh, I've actually felt like the audience cuts were very befitting. Like, there were moments they cut to Tandiswa's family, and you're like, let's see. Ziggy's family.
Don't worry, nobody remembers Ntsiki.
No,
you're right.
Let's not continue the roast now, please. Yeah. You know, and it was interesting to see their facial reactions and how
Listen, I mean, the point with these things is you've got to have a thick skin. You can't go on there and be sort of person who's really concerned about what everyone thinks of you, and you're trying to spin things, and it's, you know, it's me. You just got to go in there and have fun. If people want to nail you, they're going to nail you. It's great. It's all humor. And if you're going to take it, you can dish it out. And if you want to dish it out, you've got to be able to take it. That's all. So thanks, Carla. Thanks for the feedback. Mm. But I will say, I felt kind of bad for people they were talking about that weren't there.
Like Maps
Maponyane. I thought that was very unfair. And like, don't go after him. His girlfriend is on stage, not him. You know what I mean? It just doesn't seem like if he has no opportunity to defend himself, or even he's not in the audience.
Didn't opt in
You couldn't even see his reaction. So it just seems like it's a little bit unfair.
But some opportunities were just right in your face, and you couldn't help but take advantage.
I don't know.
Yeah. So means his fiance. And
yeah.
You see?
Right. All right. Watch the movie Bait with Jamie Foxx as the lead actor. They put a chip in his jawbone after he's knocked out with a brick. It's really funny. Check it out. That's from Vince. Okay.
See, and how do you know you can trust these people as well?
Which people?
You mean they're going to program you to do stuff that you don't want to do?
They say, oh, yeah. This is what it's all about, and we just want to give you the ability to speak a new language. Then tomorrow you're mooing like a cow.
Or even worse, you go to bed
mooing.
Because, I mean, if they were going to use it for evil, they'd definitely get you to moo like a cow.
Yeah. Can you imagine that? Like,
shits and giggles? I would do that.
We've recruited the U6 because we think you do the best in the language studies. For that, you're robbing a bank.
There we go.
Six of you have assassinated a president.
Yes. They
programmed me to assassinate a president.
And now you know you're locked up behind bars and you don't even remember it happening because they went and deleted the folder.
Oh my.
Exactly.
No, you don't have any knowledge of what happened because you don't remember a goddamn thing. They just deleted the folder and emptied the trash.
And the next day, the cops arrest you. You go, why? I was in bed. Like, whatever.
We've got video footage of you, sir, assassinating the president.
That would kind of be cool on the part of the people who can control it.
Yo.
I send out a crew of people to go out, steal money, bring it back to my place.
And then you delete them.
Yeah. Leave them right on the scene of the crime, and they don't know.
You can delete their memory banks by wireless, so you don't even have to be in the room.
Yeah.
On the network, you just delete their brains.
Jeez, that would be horrible.
All right. Well, here are these personality types. They're actually factors. It's called the five-factor model, and everyone possesses some degree of each. So you try to figure out what your balance is. The first characteristic is conscientiousness. What did you say?
Greed.
No. Oh. Conscientiousness. People who rank the highest in conscientiousness are efficient, well-organized, dependable, and self-sufficient. They prefer to plan things in advance. They aim for high achievement. People who rank lower in conscientiousness may view those with this personality trait as stubborn or obsessive. Studies show that marrying someone high in conscientiousness increases your chances of workplace success. That's if you marry someone like that. A conscientious spouse can boost your productivity and help you achieve more. There we go. The second quality, characteristic, is extroversion. People who rank high in this one, see ya.
What?
Of course. Extroversion. Gain energy from social activity.
Okay.
They're talkative and outgoing, and they're comfortable in the spotlight. Others may view them as domineering or attention-seeking.
Wait, so we all have this, and some people are just sitting at a 1%.
So what I want you to do is grab a piece of paper and write these down, and then out of 100, you've got to be able to split it between the five. Okay?
First one, conscience.
Conscientiousness, then extroversion. And by the way, if you want to pick out an extrovert, be on the lookout for a strong handshake. Studies show men with the strongest hand grips are most likely to rank in extroversion in a high way and are least likely to be neurotic. That doesn't hold true for women, though. Agreeableness is the third characteristic. Those who rank high in agreeableness are trustworthy, kind, and affectionate towards others. They're known for their pro-social behavior. They're often committed to volunteer work and altruistic activities. Mabali, this is you through and through.
Yes, it is.
Volunteer work.
No, look, with my family, it definitely is. Yeah. With somebody that I don't care about, it's the exact opposite.
So agreeableness, other people may view agreeable people as being naive or overly passive. And you want a financial investor who's high in agreeableness. Do you know why?
Why?
Studies show agreeable investors are least likely to lose money from risky trading. Avoid an investor who's high in openness. That personality is associated with overconfidence that can lead an investor to take excessive risks. So agreeableness has good and bad qualities. And here in this case, you want one who's less likely to take a risk on your behalf. In other words, they lose less money. They don't necessarily make more money. They just lose less.
But couldn't also be on the side of being a pushover?
Yeah. Well, agreeable people they tend to want to have other people like them.
Yes.
But there is that component of pro-social behavior, which is very good. You know, they'll do things for other people. They'll consider other people. Sort of like the Japanese, when they go up an escalator, everybody stands on one side and lets the people in a hurry go past on the other side. Here in South Africa, that doesn't happen.
You stand right in the middle.
No, someone stands right in the middle and blocks you, and you have to tap them on the shoulder, and they look pissed off when you tell them to move to the left. It's crazy. All right, the next one is openness to experience. So far we've got conscientiousness, agreeableness, and extroversion. The fourth one is openness to experience. People who rate high in openness are known for their broad range of interests and vivid imaginations. They're curious and creative, and they usually prefer variety over rigid routines. They're known for their pursuits of self-actualization through intense euphoric experiences like meditative retreats or living abroad. Others may view them as unpredictable and unfocused. So I would say like Ben has a very high openness to experience.
Yeah, damn right. Yeah.
And then the final characteristic is neuroticism.
Oh, jeez.
Neurotic people experience a high degree of emotional instability. They're more likely to be reactive and excitable, and they report high degrees of unpleasant emotions like anxiety and irritability. Other people may view them as unstable and insecure. But here's an interesting fact. Neurotic people seek acceptance by publishing a lot of pictures on Facebook. Oh, yes. Studies show that they're less likely to post comments or updates that could be seen as controversial, but they are more likely to post lots of pictures. They also have the most photos per album of any of them. How do you like that?
Oh, these are...
Mm-hmm.
the large amounts of the wrong characteristics could lead to a mess of a person.
And none of them are wrong, because even neuroticism, people who are neurotic tend to be sticklers. Like, they're perfectionists. They want things done a certain way.
But it also has to be balanced out with something else. Otherwise,
So, how much of each of those do you think you've got? A healthy dose of each? You think you're 20% of each, because there are five of them? Or do you think you've got a much larger proportion of one of them over the others that determines the way you behave?
Has it been determined what your perfect balance is?
There isn't a perfect balance.
Everyone's
different.
They can't be, but are there ones that you really should have more of than less, according to specialists?
Nope. There isn't a right or a wrong here.
Cool.
In other words, you could be 90% neurotic and 10% conscientious, and you'd be you. For some people, that's the way they are. That's the way they're built. For some people, extroversion could account for the largest part of their personality. Then you would imagine someone who's always out partying, someone who loves social activity, someone who needs other people around them, someone who could never be at a desk job, 9 to 5, in a cubicle. They'd go crazy. And then you get people who obviously would have a whole lot more openness. So that's like Ben, who likes variety over rigid routine. You know, you want to have experiences. You don't necessarily want to sit and learn theory all day. Am I right?
Yeah.
There we go.
You sussed me out.
There we go. You could have a Mabali who's much more introverted in some ways, but also is very interested in the people that she's interested in. It makes an effort for them. So I think under yours, Mubs, you'd probably have a huge degree of conscientiousness, and you'd probably have a large degree of openness to experience, but you're also kind of neurotic some of the time.
I accept that.
Yeah. Sia, of course, is 150% extrovert.
Yeah. I'm really looking at this and mulling over for myself.
No, you're about, let's be fair, you're about 60% extrovert and about 40% agreeable. And you're open to experience.
Given,
but you see, there's also some neuroticism there.
Yeah,
like you're constantly socially anxious.
I wouldn't even say some. I would bump the cheese up and say at least a good 20%.
So actually, see if you can figure this out as an exercise today. Put the five characteristics down and see what you think your percentage of each is, just as in a matter of interest.
What would you list for yourself as first?
I don't know. I think openness to experience and conscientiousness. Probably right up there.
As the biggest one, openness to experience?
And conscientiousness,
Neurotic?
No. I don't think I'm very neurotic. Am I?
I don't know. You don't mull over like anxiety or...
No. I move very quickly.
Worrying or...
Not that interested.
No, you just do.
No. If I worry, I worry for 5 minutes and then I move on. And there's probably a little extroversion.
Definitely not agreeableness. That's your smallest quality, I would say.
Well, yeah.
I'd give you 15 if it's a percentage.
10. 10% agreeableness,
That's even asking for
much. You know what? Every time these personality tests come out, I take a sort of curious look at them, just because they'll maybe tell you something about yourself. And that's the whole point of life, right? Is to figure out what you are and who you are.
That's so interesting.
Let's move on.
So once you've figured out what your mix there of character traits is, the next question you should ask yourself is whether or not you're a narcissist.
Oh, there's a good one.
Dr. Ramani Durvasula, a professor of psychology at California State University, and also a licensed clinical psychologist, shares some of the qualities that might make you or someone you know a narcissist. So let's go through some of these quickly.
All right.
So you are a narcissist if you blame others for your problems. The good doctor.
And then, of course, we have Crooked Hillary. Crooked Hillary, fuck.
Yeah. Amen. The good doctor says that one common quality of narcissists is never taking ownership when they make mistakes. They will blame anyone they can instead of admitting their wrongdoing.
I was offended.
Now, you're also a narcissist if you lack empathy. This we've
Nobody
heard
gives
before.
A shit.
Well, there you go. This we've heard quite a lot. This is often recognized as the hallmark quality of narcissists. People with narcissistic personality disorder are often incapable of relating to the feelings of others.
Mm-hmm. I'm ticking some of these boxes.
Okay. Do you expect endless thank yous after you've done something nice for someone?
No.
Okay, when narcissists buy someone a gift, they expect an inappropriate amount of gratitude. And this quality applies in the workplace too. Sure. They will expect you to thank them and be grateful for that for the rest of your life.
Nah, that's ridiculous.
See, but what is an inappropriate amount?
I mean, you do something nice for someone and then you probably keep reminding them.
Wasn't that, it great that I did
that?
That
one nice thing
you,
that yeah. I did oh. for you 6 years ago. Do you remember that?
I actually got into a fight with a friend a couple of months ago, and they called me out on this, and I didn't think it's a problem. But when we had conflict, I would call them out and say, but I have done this and this and this for you.
Oh.
Is that bad? Mm. I don't think it's bad.
Well, listen, if you expect someone to be eternally grateful for like a chocolate bar you bought, you're a fucking moron, right? I mean, you're a moron. You can't expect that kind of attention. And I think narcissists imagine that when they do something good, it's so much better than when anyone else does something good.
Oh, sucks.
So if, for example, you go over to someone who's crying and you say to them, are you okay? Can I get you anything? And you bring them a box of tissues. If you're a narcissist, you think you're like Jesus Christ. You think you've just saved the world.
Yeah.
And you expect that person to be grateful to you like a servant for the rest of your life.
And why are you reminding them of all the things you did for them? That's in the past.
See, that's what they said as well.
Yeah, they've done nice things for you too. Do they remind you?
I'm not.
Sia. Yes, Sia.
Okay.
I don't mean to sound defensive, but I'm saying I'm not making myself out to be a saint. But if I do certain things for you, best believe you must be.
Okay, but how grateful? I mean, do you want them to fall over themselves to say thank you?
How grateful?
How much is enough? If I go, thanks, Sia.
That's, but depends what. Like, if I helped you out when you were going through a breakup, and you were crying and you were a mess, and I said, come over to my place, you can crash for a couple of days, and then in like 6 months' time, you betray me. Like, bro, come on now.
Sure.
That's steep. But, I mean, just giving you 10 rand to pay for your parking, that's nothing.
Are you keeping score?
Yeah, see, did you give me 10 rand to pay for my parking?
I don't, I don't keep score, but there is a certain folder Yes, I am keeping score, whatever. Mugs, I'm not ashamed.
He's keeping score.
Absolutely is keeping score. All right. Narcissists are also charming and charismatic. They tend to have highly superficial personality traits. So this includes charm and charisma. Even if a narcissist treats someone badly, the person will often rationalize a narcissist's behavior and think they couldn't possibly have done something so bad because they're so charming.
Mm.
Remember, that's the one thing that people used to say about our former president.
Yep.
Charm galore. He's charming.
And I mean, I've been around some very, very narcissistic people, and they can be lovely to be around because they're so good at telling you the stuff you want to hear. And you think, what a nice person. Actually, they're just working you.
Oh, jeez.
Mm.
Narcissists also like to give advice, even when it's unsolicited, because they think they know everything.
Right.
They think that they're more important than others. This is that superiority complex that they suffer from.
Mm-hmm.
They think that the world doesn't see how truly amazing they are, because they're just... This is now Donald Trump. He's amazing. Like, everything about him
grabbed by the pussy.
You think you're above it all.
Amazing, amazing, amazing human beings.
Amazing, amazing. I'm the best. Nobody does it better than me. Incredible. I know more than you. I'm right.
I'm really rich. I'll show you that in a second.
I'm really rich. There you go. Enough said. So those are just some of the traits of trying to figure out whether or not you're a narcissist.
Okay, so we discussed the other five personality traits. Who thinks they've got a little narcissist in them?
Sure.
We all have a little bit of it in it. Let's see.
I might have slightly more than I'm comfortable admitting.
Sia's hesitating to respond here.
I definitely score on the lacking empathy part, I think.
Yeah, me too. That's because I just don't, you know, emotionally, there's not a lot going on, to be perfectly honest.
I don't mean to sound esoteric, but what if you just love yourself?
No, you're meant to. You see, there's
a lot.
No, there's a lot of healthy components to being a narcissist.
Like, vain bad?
Well, vanity comes into it, you see. Mm. I mean, the fact is, like, you should be at a point in your life at some destination in the future. You should be able to, if you really want to be a happy person, to reach a point where you go, I don't want to be anyone else but me. Right?
Yeah.
I like me. That's good. But if you like you so much that everybody else, oh, shame, poor them, then it starts becoming a bad thing.
But to the point,
you start imagining that everyone wants to be you. No, they don't.
But to the point where if you love yourself enough, you'll say, actually, you aren't good for me. I'm not going to stand for this sort of behavior. Or it really might seem narcissistic, but to say, you are less than me.
Oh.
Sorry, that's
just okay. Do you want me to remind you what that is exactly, Sia? It's when you think you're better than everybody else.
Yes, there we go.
Okay.
That's Sia.
So we all have a little bit of narcissism in us.
Look, okay. We've also got to be careful not to conflate these three words, confidence, arrogance, and narcissism. They're not the same thing. Confidence is something you need to survive. You need to get out of bed in the morning. You need it to make a difference in the world, even in small ways. You need confidence. Confidence is a very positive characteristic. Arrogance, not so much, because that
What's
means...
What's the difference between arrogance and narcissism?
Unjustified confidence, right? So an arrogance is like, I can do anything. I'm much cleverer than these people here. I've done this and I've done that and you've done nothing. And, you know, that kind of thing. Okay. And also believing that you're better than you really are. And then there's narcissism, which is more about how you view yourself. And while we're saying that there's probably a healthy dose of that too, there's also a very unhealthy aspect to it, which is all these things that my buddy's pointed out. I don't know. I mean, I think you've got to be aware of these things. Just like, be self-aware. Not self-absorbed, but self-aware. So self-awareness means you go into a situation and you can tell when you're getting annoying. You know, I sometimes sit in a meeting and I can immediately tell if I'm starting to annoy people. And then I just go quieter. It happens to all of us. Have you ever been in a social arrangement? People are having a fun conversation and someone will come in and they'll say something and it'll just ruin the flow of the conversation. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, this happens all the time.
Right.
It takes a lot to realize that though, because many people just carry on.
Right. So you sometimes are having a really nice discussion. Let's say Mubs and I are talking and Ben interjects with some nonsense and spoils the whole
thing. Hypothetically speaking.
Hypothetically. It's not what's happening. And then Mabale and I kind of look at each other and we look at Ben, and Ben has no self-awareness. So he's like, he just carries on rambling because he now thinks he's part of this conversation and it's important that he's joined in. That's self-awareness. You need a little bit of that. But don't be self-absorbed. See, it's all sliding scales. It's all balance.
Mm.
Never be 100 and never be 0. A little bit in between is good. And 50-50 is not good either, because then you're jumping around the whole time.
Yeah.
Just decide where you are and be aware.
Well, further to the self-awareness, science has proven that men who actually don't mind being small spoon are better, more sensitive lovers.
What do you mean?
Well, the whole thing of male dominance, right? Men believe they must always be the big spoon.
Is that the one who's at the back?
Yeah, because it's a dominance thing. But some men actually don't mind being a small spoon. Like I small spoon from time to time.
So spooning is when you lie and you kind of,
you're
the one person's behind, the other one's inside. Yeah, all right, I got you.
So for many men, they shudder at the thought of being a small spoon because it shows you being submissive, that kind of stuff. But actually it shows you're a lot more self-aware, got a greater sensitivity sort of mindset, and will be a more compassionate and better lover in the greater scheme of things.
You small spoon?
Yeah.
You've small spooned in your time, Mubs?
Yep.
All right. Sia, people want to know if you're a small spoon. He says yes, always. All right, so Ben, you actually, you don't mind. Sometimes you're the big spoon.
Sometimes I'm a small spoon, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But being okay with that shows that you've got compassion and you understand Self-awareness again.
Why spoon? I've never understood.
Because spoons fit into each other like that. They cup each other.
Okay, you see, yeah. if you never ask, you'll never know.
See, right. That's the thing. When you kick a guy out on his ass, you never spoon. So this subject's lost on you.
No, I have small. Well, when I've been in actual relationships, I have small spooned. But if it's just, you know.
But have you ever big spooned a guy?
Yes, Ben. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So you've been on the outside.
Yes, I've been.
And it was normal.
It was fine. It didn't bother either one of us.
Exactly. So therefore, you were with people who show compassion and sensitivity.
Yeah.
But I reckon. Okay, so what it comes down to again, this is the male ego, right?
Yeah.
So this is about how men who they don't want to be the small spoon because it makes them feel inferior.
Exactly, like they're being dominated.
I reckon Rich Mulholland knows all about being small and big
Rich
spoon.
I reckon Rich has been a small spoon.
I think he's been both kinds of spoon.
Yeah.
Hey, Rich, how are you, man?
I am 100% the small spoon.
Really?
100%. Well, you must cuddle me and keep me warm. I'm totally down. There's like the one guy is working. It's not actually about being sensitive. It's about being selfish. The big spoon is doing all the work. It's like the small spoon gets a free blanket. Jazz must be the spoon.
See, and with that, narcissism comes back into play here. This is great.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we were talking a little bit about these personality characteristics and narcissism and all the rest of it. I mean, can you recognize your own narcissism sometimes?
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I really, really enjoy it. I've been opening about 5 or 6 web pages on the topic while I've been listening to you guys this morning. I mean, it's been a phenomenal show. But it is tricky. And I do like the idea that instead of it being that you are this or you are that, it's understanding the degrees to which you are something.
Right.
And so I think, like, for sure, man, I can pick up exactly what you were saying. I can see in a meeting the point where I'm pontificating too much and I'm turning people off. Mm-hmm. But I think, though, the ability to be aware of that shows that you have it in possibly the right percentage. Because everybody can get carried away with thoughts and things, and I can get excited about something.
Right.
But when I see I'm losing people, I'm aware. And one of the things that I try and instill in my son is the social awareness of saying, hey, kiddo, you know, can you see you've been talking about that video game for so long, but there's a point where everyone has dialed out. You need to be aware of that, and it's something that he's been working on, and I think it's actually something you get as you get a bit older.
Because kids don't care about what other kids are doing or thinking or saying. They don't even listen to each other, really. You know, listening is something that you have to learn to do. It's something that you get to do when you're older. Kids don't listen. They don't even listen to their parents most of the time, right?
Right, and then as you get older, you start learning a new kind of listening, which is listening to learn rather than listening to reply. Which, right. You know, it really, really is a massive challenge.
So when you're in a meeting, for example, and you can feel that you're losing people, or when you're in a discussion and it's social, and you feel like you're not really making an impact, you're not really being, you know, being useful, being valuable in this discussion, how do you stop yourself?
Well, I throw it back as a question. So always. So let's say I'm talking about let's say it's presentation theory, because that's the kind of stuff I'll be talking about, and I'll be going through these things, and I'll be trying to take them through a situation, and I can see that maybe they're dialing out. I'll then turn around and say, okay, so tell me quickly, when was the last time you were presenting, and at what point did you feel, was there a point that you felt you were losing the audience at all? And then they'll go back to that, and then as soon as they re-engage there and they have to get thoughtful, then what happens is I've now created an empathy for the topic that I was discussing, because I've made it real for them. So instead of me trying to talk about something, because you only lose people when their give a shit tank is empty, right? Nice. So everybody has a give a shit tank. And generally when you start engaging with people on any topic, that tank is empty. And at some point at the beginning, you have to make them care. So you start filling up their give a shit tank. Now you may have bought, like, you know, so their gas tank is a bit full. Mm-hmm. You may have bought 2 minutes of attention, but then you're talking for 3 minutes. This is a problem, and this is when they dial out. So what you have to do is you have to repump some fuel. So then by getting them to empathize with the situation, by maybe making it about them again, then you filled up the tank. So now you're saying, okay, so you remember that feeling. Let me explain to you exactly what that feeling was, or how we can get around that, because that's what we're talking about now. And then I've bought another minute or two of attention.
Hmm. How often do you pick up on the clues, though, that – is it a body language thing? Is it a particular feeling that you have? Because sometimes you get it, but sometimes you actually pick it up from other people in terms of plain observation. Is it something that you see? Is it something you hear? You feel it's difficult to quantify? I mean, how do you get that impression? Because you're really good at this. I've seen you speak a number of times, and you do. And we're talking about a huge group of people, not just one or two people. You're talking often, you know, presenting something to an audience of up to 1,000, maybe even more people. How do you know?
So big audiences are much easier than small audiences. That's one of the universal truths. Because a big audience, you're only ever speaking to a bank of people. And if you imagine let's say you're speaking to a couple of thousand people, every 100 people is a person. And in that group of 100, if 10 dial out, that's okay. That's good numbers, right? You still got 90% of that person's attention, that unit's attention. So big groups are very forgiving. But now you take that down to a meeting with just, you know, 5 or 6 people. And all of a sudden, if one person picks up their phone or one person starts doodling or dialing out, you know, you get a very real sense of what's going on and you have to change. But the other thing that starts happening so I'm going to say that this is something I picked up on as I got older. I certainly don't want to be condescending to say that, you know, it's only something that older people will have. But I actually just started realizing that I'm talking too long. And they don't even have to dial out because you kind of know that I know that I can look at somebody and nod my head properly and stare at them for ages and give them all the right cues, but still be in submarine mode. And I now realize that other people have that too. So I try just to do my best to think, well, shit, how long have I been speaking now? I think it's somebody else's turn and throw it back to them.
Do you have an attention span? Do you know exactly what your attention span is?
Mine personally.
Mm-hmm.
It's entirely relative to how full my tank is, because it can be topics. Like, I mean, I have been listening to the show this morning for the last 25 minutes, and I was so riveted by the topic that when I went to the loo, I took my phone and I put on the app so that I wouldn't miss part of the conversation. So you guys took your head all the way in the Oval Office with
that's
me.
That's great. We took a shit with you this morning. That's lovely.
You did indeed. It was fun. It was a goodie.
That's lovely.
But anyway.
Great. You've got healthy bowels? Everything okay?
Well, I did. Yeah, it was really good. I actually didn't even contemplate while I was there. I was thinking, I wonder, like, these guys, they're having this amazing conversation. I wonder if they ever stop to think about how many people are pushing out a turd while listening.
Plenty. I think about it all the time.
It's the same thing with social media. Like, the vast majority of replies I make to people on social media, if it's any type of length of reply, I'm on the toilet.
Yeah, or you're wearing stuff that, like, you again, you're now communicating with people in a time, we're going on a tangent here, but this is worth reflecting on. You know, before, you'd present yourself decently, like you would be dressed nicely, you'd appear in front of that person, you'd talk to them face to face.
Right.
This is not so long ago, and now we're doing, you know, you're lying there in your underpants and in a dirty old vest or something, you've got yourself propped up in 3 pillows.
The freaky shit, like Jasmine is sending you guys photographs of me or something.
Yes, exactly. Well, that's what we've got. We know exactly what you're looking like. And it's fine. You can have a conversation with someone. You know, on the radio, they used to dress up. The radio presenter would dress up in a suit and tie for the news. I mean, can you imagine Mabale presenting the news in a formal outfit every day?
I mean, I can't imagine that. I think it'd be lovely. I think you guys should make more of an effort.
Thanks very much, and you can too. What are you doing at the moment? You're lying in bed?
No, I'm sitting beside the fireplace. I've got my gym clothes on, and I'm ready to train when this is done.
All right, nice to talk to you this morning. Is there anything you want to add?
Yes, just one small little thought, I guess, on the other conversation around the neural link, and that was that something I think we're not considering. So very, very quickly, if you imagine these neural links, the idea is to try and make communication happen at a better resolution.
Yes.
So even things like language won't strictly be necessary. We won't have to learn French, because if I have a neural link and you have a neural link, I'll just be able to you know, deliver a feeling and you'll know exactly what I'm looking for. And I think that's quite exciting.
Right.
And the kind of conversation they use about chips and brains is the idea that we'll be able to communicate in higher resolution. So right now, the resolution in which we can communicate is very low. If I watched the horror movie yesterday and I wanted to tell you about it, I would be able to say words like scary or this or that, you know. But that's not really helpful for you. But But if I could give you the feeling I had, that would be quite amazing.
Oh, wow. Now, I love this. This would sort out so many communication problems between partners in a relationship. Can you imagine?
Right, because you would have intent would be mixed into everything.
Right.
So you wouldn't, the words would be less important than the emotion and the feeling that I'm delivering. Mm-hmm. So you would understand that I wasn't, you know, that I was delivering something with complete empathy rather than judgment. But here's just the one flip side. I guess this is the if I were ever write a science fiction book, this will be the book that I write. In order to do that, we're having to link our brain quite intrinsically with the chip. And then I got thinking, you know how human beings love virtual reality?
Yes.
Where we'll put on these VR helmets and we'll walk around in these virtual worlds.
Yes.
Well, I want you to fast forward to about the time where the technology we have is capable, at the time that the technology we have is good enough to do a successful neural link, mm-hmm. I want you to imagine how successful or how far up the singularity curve will be. And I think you'll find it will reach a point where it means that the kind of machine intelligence has surpassed us to some degree as well. Yeah. And I'm thinking, though, if we create this link, we're still acting under the assumption that we'll be the bosses. And what happens if the machines decide, nah, this is rad. Let's us take a, instead of a virtual reality, let's do the opposite. So imagine your fridge is like, hey, I want to feel what it feels like to walk around as Gareth. So it just takes over your brain. And then we actually just become walking meat parties for computers.
Or you become the fridge.
Yeah, so the fridge. Yeah, and you're stuck there being the fridge, opening the door like, oh, that's some bullshit. But your fridge is walking around having a party. Hey, toaster, high five. Because if we're giving that kind of link, why can't they overtake us and feel what instead of – so their virtual reality is actual reality for virtual intelligence.
I get you.
Anyway. I just want to put that out there.
It's a hard thing to wrap your head around, but that's why I completely understand why Ben and Mabali and Sia don't want to rush to have some neural link put into their brain. I think it's going to be exciting. I think it's the next step of where humanity's headed, and I think if you're not one of the first to do it, you're going to miss out.
So I'm not sure that's true, though. I think I'm with Mabali on you first. Because I think that, you know, I wasn't the first to own certain technology, but I can still own it later. And I'm kind of okay to let somebody else test it. So, you know, I feel it's like we've learned not to buy the very, very first operating generation of a phone with the brand new operating system.
Okay.
Because there's always those bugs to iron out. That's like your 3-minute scream. So,
all right. Cool. Yeah, I don't know so much. Listen, if you could get that limitless pill, you'd take it.
Yeah, for sure.
See. Goddamn hypocrite. You're a hypocrite. All right. Thank you, Rich.
Okay, thanks, cool, man. Guys. Always have a great week. You.
Rich Mulholland, everybody. The reality check this morning. It's 13 minutes to 8. A little bit of news and then the unnews. All right, Mubs, what else have we got to learn today?
Well, you know what? It doesn't surprise me that we have gotten to this point. It's Uh-oh. What? It's a week to go before Harry and Meghan tie the knot.
Hey, just hold on. Did anyone do anything for Mother's Day before we talk about those two idiots?
Well, no, I'm not a mother.
Huh?
We had like a little lunch with all the mothers in the family. Something. We just
We did the same.
Yeah, yeah.
My mom and my sister-in-law, who's a mom, and her mother, and we had a little thing at my brother's house.
Mm.
Are you meant to buy presents for Mother's Day?
Sure.
If you want to.
Are you meant to give cards?
If you want to.
Did you?
As a child, yeah, you know, you would buy a card.
But this weekend, did you?
No, I mean, my mom is in Kwakwa, so okay.
I went and bought a cake, and I thought that was sufficient. Is that okay?
Well, whatever you...
What kind of cake was it?
It was a caramel swirl cake.
What, Ben, are there levels to cakes as well?
Well, of course there are. You rock up with, like, a milk dad.
No, not wrong with that.
You know, just, of course there is. You can't give your mother a milk tart.
I don't have a problem with a milk tart.
Well, firstly, the word tarts in it. It's a horrible message for Mother's Day, guys.
Jeez, okay.
Milk tart is delicious, though.
It is, as a side entree kind of thing.
Okay.
You just rock up there. That's your primary. Hi, happy Mother's Day, milk tart.
Okay, so what is the appropriate level of gifting for Mother's Day?
Well, on the cakes, your mother's of a more mature palate, so go with a carrot cake.
No.
It's a substantial thing. It says you're not a child anymore.
Listen, I'm not engaging Crystal from Sensational Sugar every time Mother's Day rolls around.
Look, it really is up to you. I mean, there was somebody that I saw on Twitter over the weekend tweeting about how they were finally in a position to buy their mother a house. So,
that's a big Mother's Day.
Well,
a cake house?
No, an actual house. Wow. You know, people coming from struggling backgrounds who are finally able to do things. They have like these grand gestures for their parents.
Wow.
So it really is up to you.
Whoa.
I'm not sorry, Mom, if you're listening.
No, yeah.
You're never going to get a house out of me.
She doesn't need a house. This person's mother actually needed a house, and he was able to do that for her.
Need Schmied. Giving you a house.
Wow. No, we're close.
That is some serious love for your mom if you buy her a house.
Yeah.
I think that's terrific. If you can, why not, right?
Why not if that's you can? Crazy. And if you want to, why not?
All right.
I think sometimes my mother doesn't love me, really.
Well, you love Oprah and you think Oprah's your mother, so why are you expecting your mother to
love you? More and more in situations like this, I'm fueled.
Your mother
by
doesn't
that
know
belief.
You exist, yeah. All right, let's get on to Harry and Meghan.
Ah, yes.
Everybody,
so.
The British are doing their nutting. Can you imagine how
we are.
People are running around England at the moment? Oh, so excited about Harry and Meghan.
5 days away now.
Oh, my God.
Sia's beside himself. Do you have your outfit picked out?
Sia is going. You're going to a thing at the British High Commission, right?
I'll be back, yes.
Yeah, Sia's going. I'm going to join the British High Commissioner at his house for a royal wedding celebration.
For some tea and scones.
Scones. Don't say scones.
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 Oh, damn it. I'll have my fascinator ready.
Are you going to wear a fascinator?
Please do. Please do. Please do. Oh, my word.
Fascinator, okay. Pearls.
All right.
And my...
Your pearls.
Silk yeah. gloves.
Jesus, yeah. You're going to make some easy look like you're underdressed.
Oh.
Okay, so what do we got here, Mads?
All right,
what's going
so
on?
Less than a week British. To go before the royal wedding. Yeah. I am not even surprised here. Meghan Markle's father
Uh-oh.
Has now been accused of...
Oh, no.
Of secretly collaborating with a British paparazzi photographer to stage a series of fake pictures. This is what fame does to people, hey?
What is he going to do?
So the images, which appeared to show a lonely Thomas Markle browsing images of his daughter and her future husband, Prince Harry, in an internet cafe, have allegedly netted up to $180,000.
That's a good payday for him.
Mm. Other images apparently showed Mr. Markle browsing a coffee table book entitled Images of Britain, as well as getting measured up for his wedding suit. According to British media reports, the pictures were staged by Thomas Markle, as well as photographer Jeff Rayner, and they all were taken near the father, near his home in Mexico.
Listen. This guy's got no, he's got no, what does he have to behave himself
he
for?
He doesn't Everybody have any money, guys.
Exactly.
Like, he really doesn't.
So,
he's struggling.
I think it is so funny. Like, in so many ways, this is just great. First of all, everybody's going to be so excited when Meghan Markle and Harry have their first child. Like, how black is it going to be? What kind of hair is it going to have?
Ooh,
it's going to be very
yes.
exciting, right?
Yeah.
This is exciting. This is us moving forward as a species. It's good. This is very good. Because the one place that people have been full of themselves for the longest time is royal families. They've always been, you know what royal families are like. We're superior to everyone else, blah, blah, blah. You know how it goes. That's why they're the king and the queen and they're special and they deserve to live in palaces and they have, you know, sort of all this crazy stuff going on around them. Now, when that happens, everybody will just have to take a chill pill. But in the meantime, it is really funny to me that her family are these ordinary people that could be living next door to you and me. And their daughter's marrying into this, you know, wealthiest family in the world.
Yeah.
And he, like, you couldn't imagine you're the kid of Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. You're the kid one day. You grow up. Your one grandfather is the King of England. Your other grandfather lives in a caravan in Mexico. So good. It's too good to be true.
That's when I would not feel bad about ostracizing the one side of the family.
But you wouldn't. Would you want to? I mean, what if you get on well with your Mexican, your American granddad who lives in Mexico?
Gareth, it's one thing to get along with them. It's another to then have to, from Kensington Palace to then having to rinse up in a bucket
yes,
in a trailer.
But see, yeah, there isn't a good or a bad experience here. Like, if you are. This kid's not going to have a hard time. This kid's not going to have to live in the trailer forever. But it might visit granddad. I mean, if Meghan will let it, because I don't think she gets on too well with her dad.
That will humble you, hey?
And then he's got the the black grandmother and then the white grandfather, and it's going to be just so interesting. I love this. You got to admit, this is really, really exciting. This is like playing a sim game.
It's way better than the Kardashians. It's way better way than better. All other reality TV.
I wish we could follow this this whole thing around, like on a minute scale.
In what way?
Like figure out with Harry and Meghan, with Meghan's family, who's in, who's out. Figure out what Charles thinks of the whole thing. I'd like to know what Meghan's dad is saying right now. I'd like to know what Meghan's mom thinks of the whole situation.
Well, remember, Meghan's mom is allegedly going to do a tell-all with Oprah Winfrey, because obviously who else to do it
That's
with?
That's great.
Her and Oprah are...
I'll be watching.
...are supposedly going to sit down together and they're going to talk about a lot of stuff.
Oh, I'll be watching. Wouldn't you watch that?
Sure.
Hell yeah.
And then on the other side of the scale, Samantha...
The sister.
The half-sister.
In the wheelchair.
Yes.
Yes.
Who, by the way, was not going by the surname Markle.
Yes, now she's changed her surname.
Yeah, of course she's now using...
Okay.
Ker-fucking-ching, yes.
Samantha is just the loose cannon. Someone needs to hush her up, actually. Because she has a private account on Twitter. And that means you get to approve the people that follow you. So I decided, of course, I want in on this action. I really was waiting with bated breath to see if she was. And she has.
She's accepted you,
Sia. She's followed me. She's accepted me as one of her 4,000 followers.
Sia, you realize this means you're as close to royalty as you're ever going to get.
I know.
You know the 6 degrees of separation.
Yes.
I'm in there like swimwear.
Yeah, except Sia. But she and Meghan don't talk.
True.
So you still can't get to the Queen.
True. Okay. We'll work out another angle. And she uses her whole timeline just as a mess. She just tweets things like, "My father does not speak to my brother." Like, woman, wow. Don't ruin Meghan's image. Don't tweet things like that. And she says, "My brother's a lying scumbag."
Oh, wow.
This is great. This is a trade wreck. Says, "My father should not apologize for anything."
Are we sure this isn't a parody account?
This is genuinely hers. It is genuinely hers. She says,
"I love this.
The tabloid is making millions out of my family." She says, "I've been a Markle since 1964. No, honey, you haven't. And then she hates the fact that the royal wedding, now they have to shuffle off all of the homeless people.
She suddenly cares. Yeah. Like she's suddenly worried about homeless people in England.
Because, you know, it doesn't look good for the cameras to show Meghan in a great dress. And then there's a homeless old bloke. So the city's actually moving everyone out of the main city.
Can you imagine?
City.
I was in London, two weeks ago? A week and a half ago? A week ago today. And you walk around, you walk down Regent Street or Oxford Street, there are homeless people sleeping in the shop entrances of these huge designer stores.
See?
Every time you think you're living in a country where, it's very hard for people, it's hard for people there too. I think it must be very difficult to be poor in London. Mm. Very difficult. I think it's probably even harder than being poor in Johannesburg. Because being poor in London, there's not a lot of places that you can go for succor, for safety, for food, people are just, you know, they're living their lives. You get on the underground, people don't talk to each other. There's no communication. It's cold. In South Africa, I don't know about you, but I don't ignore the people who come up to me at the traffic lights. I don't ignore them and pretend they're not there. That's what people think.
More empathy.
Well, I don't know if we've got more empathy, but we at least, like, talk to each other. And I mean, that's amazing considering our history in this country, that people were always separated by this and by that. I mean, there's stuff to discuss there. I think it's fascinating. You know, Meghan Markle coming in there as an actress from America with this very higgledy-piggledy family of hers. Mm. By the way, do you think she had any idea? I mean, like when she was in Suits, she's already attained a certain level of fame, right?
I think she was already avoiding them then. That was the start.
I think so, but she didn't expect people to be this invasive about it. Now, because she's marrying into the royal family, now everything's fair game. That's why it's not just her, it's her whole family that's involved in this thing, whether she likes it or not. And people are going to be going to her dad saying, "Pose for this picture," and he'll say, "Well, how much are you going to pay me?" And then they pay him and he'll do it.
Look, I mean, before the end of the year, he'll be in some sort of mass orgy with strippers in Mexico. They'll do it.
No.
If he can get enough money.
Well, they'll lay it on, obviously.
You mean they'll do it just to embarrass her?
Yeah.
so they can publish pictures.
There is no depth to these paparazzos. Absolutely none.
You mean there's no depth to which they will not sink, Ben?
That too.
I agree with you. Yeah. All right, well, that's all we got time for this morning. Let's wrap it up with the un-news for today and give you a quick, brief idea of what's going on in the universe so that you can sound really, really smart when you get to the coffee machine today. First thing, Cape Town now has an acting mayor. This is causing quite an uproar as Cape Townians found out that the man in the post isn't actually an actor. With so many out-of-work actors in the city, now that summer has passed, the DA has truly missed an employment opportunity here, and it could come back to haunt them when election time rolls round. Cyril Ramaphosa has assured the press that the Supra situation is being handled. Handled, as in the land issue, handled, as in the Gupta situation, and handled, as in SAA's situation. Ramaphoria is now well and truly over, with Rama moaning now starting to take place and even Rama sadness showing up in certain circles. And finally, Arsene Wenger's time at Arsenal is finally over. He took charge of his final match for the club over the weekend, but now he has bugger all to do. Arsene Wenger just woke up and ordered his wife and dogs to run laps around the garden, and he was very disappointed by their lack of intensity. He says he may be forced to visit the transfer market unless their application improves dramatically. We will see you tomorrow between 6 and 9. Have an excellent day in the company of cliffcentral.com. We will be regaling you with a past interview because what we've decided is that there's so much great quality content out there that we want you to hear the stuff you might have missed. And today, Double HP, the focus of our conversation. We, in fact, spoke to Double HP not so long ago. He's been through some serious ups and downs, one of South Africa's most loved musicians. And he gave us an update on the happenings in his life. Got very frank on why he left Twitter, his history and love in Mafikeng, and even working on music and television. He revealed intimate details of how he attempted suicide 3 times and talked about his much-publicized relationship with Lerato Sangadi. You've never heard Double HP like this before. That's coming up next. Stick around.
This is CliffCentral.com.